$5 Bin Podcast with Mark and Rick.
And now with a splash of Brian.
Hello, Cinemaniacs, and welcome to the $5 Bin Podcast, the podcast where we revisit and review movies from our youth. I'm your host, Mark Dittleman, and with me are my co-host, Brian Higgins.
Hello.
And no Rick this week.
Nope.
He's actually on vacation.
Yeah.
He's up in Maine, and I don't know if he was planning on ice fishing, but it's an extremely warm weekend.
Well, at least in Massachusetts.
At least in Massachusetts. So, yeah. So, I'm sure he's doing other outdoorsy things in Maine. Maybe
regular fishing.
Chasing a moose. Whenever I think of Maine, my go-to is like just trying to search for the Poland Spring.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The commercial and like a
that's what it means to be from Maine.
And a raccoon like turning a sign, going like the arrow going the wrong way.
Oh, so those, those raccoons sure are scamps.
Yeah. So how's it going lately, Brian?
Oh, it's going well.
Well, it's been a couple of weeks, but I'm still riding high from probably the best football game I've ever seen.
Oh,
in my
yeah,
life.
That was incredible.
Obviously, we're a Massachusetts guy. You guys are probably sick of it, but I can't stop talking about one of the greatest catches ever in a Super Bowl, first overtime ever in a Super Bowl, greatest comeback in history. I mean, I don't think you can argue that.
Greatest single game comeback in
yes.
history.
Yes, yeah, oh yeah, exactly.
I'm still partial to the 2004 Red Sox.
Oh yeah, that's a series though.
Yeah.
I'm saying a single game, but it was definitely the best football game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So that was just amazing, and we watched it right here in the Satellite Movie office because we're
we
not
did.
In the movie cave this week.
Correct.
So yeah, I was really super excited about the Patriots and you know just them getting in the end zone every time and
doing
and
like a victory dance.
Doing a victory dance. Hey Brian, you knew where I was going with that.
I'm well accustomed
you
to the schmarts.
You can predict them now.
I can.
So that relates to the movie we did a reviews of this week.
It does.
And we decided to do, based upon just kind of riding high, though, because a lot of things in the news and a lot of personal things have kind of been a downer lately a little bit, not counting the Super Bowl win. That was one of the highlights. So we decided to do
that
something.
That was a downer for like 98% yeah, of the country.
Exactly.
Though, so.
Exactly. Not for us, though.
Yeah.
But we decided to do something that was very lighthearted and fun, and nothing says that like teen dancing.
Of course.
So we picked the 1984 classic. Now, I can't say classic for this one, Footloose.
It is considered a
it
classic.
It is considered a classic, an 80s classic. Now, this was directed by Herbert Ross. Now, this guy actually has quite an extensive filmography of directing. I kind of just pinpointed a few of the more notable ones, because he's got some random ones that you've heard of. But kind of his more notable ones, the Michael J. Fox, Secret of My Success.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The Steel Magnolias.
Oh, of course.
And then My Blue Heaven, which I love with Steve Martin.
Oh, I
Martin.
Love My Blue Heaven.
Well, I love
we
got
to do that
song.
Someday.
We should do that one. But there's other ones on there, too, that you've heard about, but they're a little more random, I'd say.
Boys on the Side.
Boys on the Side. Like, I've never seen that one, but I know that's like a girls get together and bonding movie, kind of like a Waiting to Exhale type of thing. I haven't seen that one. Another interesting thing, and I was trying to trace the lineage of this fact that I read online, is that director Herbert Ross is the former brother-in-law of Jacqueline Kennedy.
Okay.
And I don't know how that works, because he's not related to the Kennedys. He must have been married to one of her siblings and
probably,
then got divorced.
And then got divorced.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because the other fact was former uncle-in-law of John F. Kennedy Jr. That was one of the things.
Yeah.
Uncle-in-law. That's a fun term. So.
Uncle-in-law.
So, Brian, what was your kind of experience? When did you first recall watching Footloose?
I never watched it before this.
You've never seen Footloose?
Nope.
This is the first time?
First time.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I definitely say it is one to watch as a pop culture blind spot.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it came out when I was 1 year old. So.
Right. I mean, but it came out, you always think about, if you think of the 80s dance movies, you have this and you have Dirty Dancing. Those are the two dancing movies from the 80s. So, this, you know, 70s had Saturday Night Fever. This was the 80s dance generation, the two go-to movies.
I never saw Dirty Dancing all the way through either.
Oh, I've seen that.
I've seen pieces.
I know people that can quote every part of that movie, and I don't remember much of it.
I know that nobody puts Baby in
that's
the corner.
That's true. Well, that's a fine. And the, you know, the lift at the end.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of the big thing.
I've been with her so long.
Well, that's another thing about both of these two movies, Dirty Dancing and Footloose, is that the soundtracks were so memorable, and people still can recall and sing along to most of the songs, especially when you have one artist. Kenny Loggins was the go-to guy. He did pretty much the entire soundtrack for this. He did Danger Zone for Top Gun. He did I'm All Right for Caddyshack. So he was the go-to 80s soundtrack guy.
Yeah,
so.
He definitely was.
And the music actually clearly plays a big part in this movie.
Well, now, did you know they made a musical out of this?
Footloose?
Yeah. There's a stage
maybe,
show.
Maybe I did. I don't remember. It didn't last very long, did it? You know what? I think I keep getting it confused with when they did Wedding Singer as a musical.
Ah, yes.
Maybe I was thinking of that. I don't know. Didn't they have someone kind of a big name in the Footloose? Was it the guy from Glee, Matthew Morrison? Was he the guy? I think I remember hearing commercials for that, but...
It was in 1998, okay.
Oh, really? Okay, yep. I thought that was a more recent thing.
Nope, but there's possible that there's been revivals and such along the way.
Now, I saw this movie, obviously, when this came out, I was 4 years old, so...
So you saw it opening weekend.
Exactly. This is my kind of movie. I liked anything animated and anything with Kevin Bacon. Those were my go-tos. It seemed like this was like a rite of passage movie, especially like before going into high school. I feel like I maybe saw this 7th and 8th grade because when you're going into high school, you got to watch like all the John Hughes movies and all the high school movies.
So like
there.
License to Drive, this was you trying to train yourself for what to expect
exactly,
in high school.
Right. I think so. I feel like I don't really remember it that much, but I do remember later, like junior and senior year of high school, like us bonding over when Footloose came on and everyone knew the dance moves from like the end scene. I remember being at a graduation party and Maddie Doherty just busting out everybody cut and he knew like all the dance moves and stuff like that. So it was one of those like a shared bonding experience because it's like, oh, I saw that movie too. I can talk about this movie with you, you know. Caught it on TV and it was always, again, it's a fun, they have their own moral story in it, but you don't have to think too deep. You're just like, hey, this is a fun movie. Let's get into it. So let's get into it ourselves.
Ah.
So this movie
is one of your better transitions.
So the movie starts off and there's all these like feet dancing.
Yeah.
And you got the classic Footloose theme song.
You got to imagine what it would be like to be that cameraman. Those just a sign like lay on the ground and shoot their feet.
Just shoot their feet. They're doing all these like twisty moves, and some of the choices in footwear here were quite interesting because, I mean, this is the 80s, so like 9 out of 10 shots is someone wearing leg warmers.
Yeah.
But then you also had someone dancing in high heels, which just seems awkward.
I mean, if they know how to dance in them, they can.
And then bowling shoes, too.
Of course.
Of course. You got to have those. So we go to this small farm town. And you start to hear the voiceover of the Reverend, whose name is, I kept writing down his name, and I believe it was Shaw. Shaw Moore is his name.
Yeah.
And this is the great John Lithgow. So you have his booming voice, and he's talking over these shots of fields and you know, crops and everything like that in the small town. And he's in the church talking to his parishioners, and he's speaking out about rock music, how it's evil and it's bad. It's a bad influence. And you see these girls, and they're all whispering about the cool new guy, and this is Kevin Bacon. Now, Kevin Bacon, I was reading, he's got this, like, spiky hair. Now, he inspired this off of Sting from The Police. So, I mean, I think at one point they kind of say he's got, like, a David Bowie look type of thing. So he was. So you can tell he's a fish out of water because he's a big city guy. You could tell he likes, obviously, the rock lifestyle because he emulates these guys, but...
You can smell what he's cooking.
You can smell what he's cooking. I knew this, but it definitely jumped back into my mind when it came up when you saw that the Reverend's wife was Diane Wiest.
Yeah.
A very young Diane Wiest.
Now, one thing that I did find interesting in this opening section.
I wonder if the same thing I pointed out. Go ahead.
I don't know. During all those establishing shots, you know how usually it'll be like, welcome to this town, this is the name of the mayor, or this is the name of the sheriff. Yeah. It has the Reverend's name
on
the
side. It's got
his
name, yeah.
Like, I was just, is he that much of an influential, I mean, clearly he's very influential.
He's in charge of the moral, spiritual fiber of the entire town, he has the say.
That's weird, right?
It is weird,
Like, who puts, like, hey, there is a Reverend here.
Yeah. He's more of like the governing body over this town council that we meet later. But one of the things I noticed when they're doing the shots around the church is they're showing people's reactions to the sermon. There's one kid that is passed out, and his dad wakes him up, and the kid is terrified. He woke up from a nightmare, and he was like, where am I? But then I think he goes back to sleep again or something.
Maybe he was waking up from a good dream, realizing that he actually lives
like,
in
I'm
this
in church.
Town where he can't dance.
Right, exactly. Kevin Bacon's name is Ren McCormick, which I was always like, rewatching this movie, it was probably around the time I was like, oh, Ren, like Ren and Stimpy.
Oh.
That's probably what I was thinking. Because I don't think I knew anyone in real life who had the name Ren except for Ren and Stimpy. So.
Or Renaissance fairs.
That's true. And
Kylo Ren.
So these girls that I look at them, one's the Reverend's daughter. This is Ariel. So like the Little Mermaid. This is played by Laurie Singer. And she's with the popular girls, and she's going to run out. One of her friends is Rusty, played by Sarah Jessica Parker.
Indeed. Who, anytime they show them next to each other,
yeah.
I wonder, is Ariel very tall?
She's
or is
super
Sarah
tall.
Jessica Parker, like, really tiny?
Both. Like, Laurie Singer's a tall actress, and Sarah Jessica Parker is short. So I think
in my mind, I've always assumed Sarah Jessica Parker was relatively tall for
really?
Some reason.
No, she's kind of short. Yeah. She's about the same size as her husband, Matthew Broderick, and he's short.
And I always assume he's tiny.
So. No, yeah, he is. He is. Yeah, they're both very tiny. So they go out, they go driving, and then in a very dumb move, Ariel's boyfriend, this meathead local bumpkin named Chuck, he pulls up in his truck, and she kind of like, she climbs out the car and straddles between the two. Like, she's got one leg on the car and one leg in the truck. And this reminded me of that, you remember a few years back when Jean-Claude Van Damme was doing like the splits between those two trucks? Like, she was doing
the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Until like a Mack truck was coming towards them, and she finally jumped into the truck. So maybe at the time, I don't know if it's because of my age now, but watching a movie like this, I'm like saying to myself, that's very dangerous.
It is.
Where as a kid, I might have been like, that's a cool stunt. But now I'm like, that's very irresponsible. Well,
maybe this says something about me, but throughout the entire movie, I want them to justify this dancing ban with more than just anecdotal reasons.
Yeah, okay.
Like, this would have been a perfect, like, I wouldn't have done it with the Reverend's daughter.
Yeah.
Because she plays a prominent role through the film.
She's a wild child.
But, like,
she's trying to fire
her some random character and, like, this happens and then they cut away and they're like, she was killed because of the rock and roll music leading to her. Like, if you have it be a character that you've already introduced.
Right. Instead of someone you haven't met.
Yeah. This reckless lifestyle.
Well, that's kind of one of their big reveals, I guess, this movie.
Yeah, but, like, I want the stakes there.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And that would have immediately added stakes, I think.
I do want to mention that, like, Van Halen was playing on the radio because, again, the music is very prominent and a lot of the big names around the time are throughout this movie. Oh, another thing I thought was interesting is they mentioned how he's moved there. He's only been in town for like 8 hours. And at one point later in the school, they go like, because all the girls are like, oh, he's so hot. They're like, oh, are you seeing anyone around town yet? And he's like, he's been there for 2 days.
Yeah. Well, also, he's been in town for 8 hours. And the first thing he does is go to church.
He's got to go to church. Well, because they move there on Sunday. Well, that makes sense because we find out that him and his mom move in with the mom's sister and her husband and the kids. So if that family goes to church every Sunday, you're kind of the guest in the house. You got to do what they're doing.
What time do you think this church service is?
I mean, aren't those usually like 10 in the morning about?
Yeah, did they get there at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, they must have drove straight from Chicago.
And they didn't give them a chance to sleep?
Yeah, like, no.
They can come to church next weekend.
Well,
like,
yeah.
Just be like they've been in town for 3 days.
Yeah. So while the girls are being wild, Ren and his mom are kind of catching up and they're at, you know, they're talking with the Reverend and everything. And all of a sudden this guy, Roger, comes up and he starts talking to the Reverend, and I want to play this clip here because get into this some more later because, like we said, this town has banned dancing and music and drinking and drugs. But in general, the idea behind this movie is about censorship because they start to carry it too far, too. So we kind of get to see the early seeds of this when this guy, Roger, who's on the town council, starts talking about books that he'd like to ban as well. So let's listen to that.
Reverend, we have a little problem. I heard that the English teacher over at the school is planning to teach that book.
Slaughterhouse-Five. Isn't that an awful name?
Oh, yeah, it's a great book. Slaughterhouse-Five. It's a classic.
Do you read much?
Maybe in another town it's a classic.
In any town.
Tom Sawyer is a classic.
So this is another kind of false memory. I thought a scene happened in this movie that doesn't actually happen. I thought one of the other books they try to ban throughout the movie is Huckleberry Finn because of N-word Jim.
Oh.
You know? I felt that happened, or maybe it's another movie I'm thinking of, because when I went back and I said, Well, I thought they tried to ban, and later when they start burning the books, I thought they were trying to get rid of Huckleberry Finn. And then my wife reminded me, said, well, the guy brought up Tom Sawyer. Maybe that's what you were thinking of.
Maybe.
And I go, but I thought that because of that word, they were like, we have to get rid of this book. And I was like, well, it's still a classic book.
Well,
based on
the town, they probably used that word.
Yeah, that's true. They might.
I
did not see any black characters in this movie whatsoever. Which they added. They added into the remake.
There's plenty of appropriation of African American culture through the dance.
That's true.
So, but yeah, like I do want to just go on the record. Slaughterhouse Five is a classic.
It is a classic, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the books that they bring out throughout this movie. Tom Sawyer is a classic, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I said before, so Rand and his mom move in with her sister. And I always remember this line, like the first time seeing it. One of his young cousins goes, Rand is a fox. Like, that's your cousin. Don't do that.
More reason why they probably wouldn't ban Huck
Again,
Finn.
Maybe that's allowed in this town, though. I don't know.
Maybe.
Small town. Did we get what state this was at any point?
I don't think
it's
so.
It's called Beaumont. Yeah, I don't know. I want to say like Kansas or something, but I don't know. So Ariel and Chuck, her boyfriend, go to this drive-in place. I was thinking slightly about License to Drive again because they went to a drive-in, drive-up food place. Because that's always the cool place to hang out.
I wish we had these.
I know.
There was never anything like this when I was growing up. And I just always lament that I lacked that.
We had Harry's,
teen experience.
But you just parked and you went inside. It wasn't really like a drive-up place that you hung out.
Yeah,
hung outside.
Well, and
by
it was always
car.
Full of like. I mean, there was some teens, and then it was like truckers and random people.
Yeah, oh yeah, random.
So it wasn't
people.
Like
the
regular hangout.
Yeah, it wasn't a teen hangout. And she puts in some music now, like we said before. So this music is illegal in this town. And then I like this sequence of everyone like dancing while still doing their jobs. Like people are dancing, they're jumping over like poles. The guy who's cooking the burgers is like dancing. They're all dancing to this boombox. It's got a wide range.
Yeah, I think that is a recurring theme in this movie.
That's true.
Of things having very wide ranges for sound.
Yeah. Yep. And so Lithgow shows up and he turns off the music. He was there to give Ariel some money because the mom didn't think that she had enough. So they were busted. So the next day, like Ren's first day at school, he's kind of, again, he's this cool city guy. He shows up in his leather jacket and his tie. And he's driving a Volkswagen Beetle. And he's got some Quiet Riot playing, which, again, he's the only one playing music. He doesn't know about these rules, so he's doing that.
Yeah.
And there he bumps into this real, like, hillbilly guy who is Willard, who's played by Chris Penn.
Yep.
The late Chris Penn.
Looking fairly unrecognizable if you know him from his work later in life.
Yeah, he did get larger, but his face does look like a Penn. I mean, him and John, his brother, look, you know.
He looks kind of like Boner here.
You think he looks like Boner?
Yeah.
Boner's to Bone?
Yeah.
And they kind of like bump into each other, but they razz each other and like they form this like quick friendship.
Yeah, it's like stepbrothers.
Yeah.
Did we just become best friends?
Yeah, exactly. They quickly become friends. And we find out that Ren's from Chicago. I probably didn't pick this up really at the time watching this in middle school, but he's like, they're in line at the cafeteria and they're like, what's Chicago like? And he's like telling him about it. And he's like, and what do you guys do around here? And he makes a masturbation reference. He just like does like the hand signal. I was like, I did not catch that.
No.
So they sit down with like Rusty and this other guy, Woody, who's another guy too, who they become friends with, who's like a farm guy. And this is when he finally finds out about the no dancing because he's telling about all his kind of adventures in Chicago. And they're saying that they can't do that here. So let's take a listen to that.
Dancing. There's no dancing.
That's right.
What?
It's illegal.
Jump back.
That's true.
That's been for about 5 or 6 years.
What?
Go ahead, tell him.
Started when a bunch of kids got killed in a car wreck. Whole town went bananas, blaming it on the music and the liquor and dancing. Now they're just convinced it's all set.
Who's convinced?
Whole downtown.
Jump back. I'm going to start using that when someone says something to me. I can't believe. Jump back. But, Brian, that's basically the basis reasoning in this movie of why there's no dancing.
Yeah.
Because they blamed these kids dying on dancing and drinking. Dancing and music lead to drinking and fornication and all these things.
And death.
And death. So that's the behind the no dancing. The next scene we see Willard and Ren like in his car, and I don't know if you picked it. I did enjoy these. There were a couple times throughout this movie, and I did do clips of both these when they had these like almost Abbott and Costello routines.
Yeah,
did you
like
pick
a really
these up?
Shitty Who's On First.
Yeah, yeah. So, did you, so listen to this. So this is when Ren throws in one of his cassette tapes because he's obviously cool and he's got lots of cassette tapes in his car. So let's listen to that.
You rich?
No, what?
How long we got to buy tape for?
Get serious. This place is too weird. Don't you ever listen to the radio?
Nah, we got one radio at home, but it's never on.
You like Men at Work?
Which man?
Men at Work.
Where do they work?
No, they don't. They're a music group.
What do they call themselves?
Oh, no. Well, what about the police?
What about
them? You heard them?
No, but I've seen them.
What, a concert?
No, behind you.
What?
And then Ren says, oh, shit. So we got a few shits and assholes.
Yeah, well,
oh, yeah, this, hey.
In terms of the profanity for this movie, according to IMDb, multiple instances of profane language among the teenage protagonists, including shit, asshole, douchebag, and son of a bitch.
Yes. But that back and forth routine about Men at Work and police, it reminded me of, again, the, like you said, the Who's On First routine, but one that they had done on Animaniacs at one point when the, what was the squirrel lady? Remember there was the squirrel lady and she had like the nephew.
Yeah.
She lived in the, so anyways, they were at Woodstock for some episode for some reason. And she was like asking her nephew and she's like, who's on stage? Who? The Who? No, who's on stage? The band that's on stage. No, the band comes later. It was basically the same thing like that.
So, it was Slappy Squirrel.
Slappy Squirrel. Right. I remember that. So Ren gets pulled over and he gets a $25 fine for basically playing this music. At home, to kind of set the scene of the Reverend's household, so they're only listening to classical music like Haydn, and he's just typing on his typewriter.
Haydn? Where?
Haydn? Bach behind there.
Where? Where are you, Haydn? You shouldn't be hiding things in my house. I'm the Reverend.
There you go. See, that's how that routine works. And that music is apparently okay. That you can listen to classical because it's not going to make you dance.
What about classical gas?
Oh.
Like, would he allow that?
I don't know.
I mean, it's classical, but it's also gas.
This was a kind of a good zinger that I liked because Ren kind of gets blocked. He's trying to pull out his car and he gets blocked by the bully, Chuck, Ariel's boyfriend. And he's kind of like, oh, you're the new kid. And he starts trying to razz him. But this is one of the things I recall about this, because most movies you had seen around this time is the new kid always gets picked on. But you kind of saw a little bit that Ren doesn't stand for that. He stands up for himself, like, right from the get-go.
Yeah.
He's not intimidated by the bullies whatsoever. So I kind of like this line here.
Hey, you the new kid? I'm talking to you. Where'd your tie go? I thought only pansies wore neckties.
Oh, yeah? See that? I thought only assholes use the word pansy.
Woo! Got you on that one, Chad.
Shut up!
Sweet burn, man.
Yeah. Way to go, Chuck.
So Chuck's all pissed. Now he needs satisfaction.
Yes, he demands satisfaction.
I demand satisfaction.
So he removes his glove and challenges him to a duel.
Well, he drove
at
away.
Noon.
He didn't have a chance to. He would have.
I'm writing a better movie.
Okay. Ren is looking for a job at this mill. He gets the job and then like starts right away and starts like moving grain or something like that. Bags of grain. And Ariel shows up and she says that Chuck has challenged him to a duel, basically. And if he doesn't show up, the whole school's going to know that he's chicken. So he accepts. This is a scene that I don't recall because there is obviously a famous scene in this movie. And we've talked about this before, and you've even found many YouTube parodies. The scene later where Kevin Bacon gets all mad and he starts doing like the angry gymnastics dancing.
Yeah.
But I don't recall that he was actually on the gymnastics team, which makes sense why he knows all these moves, because I was like, why does he know all these gymnastic like moves? But he is on the gymnastics team. So
So
I didn't remember that. But so he's kind of like practicing at one point.
They probably added that scene later. They were like, how do we justify him doing all these crazy gymnastics moves with the chains and everything? Like, let's just add a scene with him on the gymnastics.
Yeah, he's on the uneven bars. He's doing flips around. So right before this kind of showdown between them two, Ariel is like, she's just fresh from boning Chuck, like on a blanket in the woods. And she's basically wearing her quote-unquote whore boots because she has these red boots that her father hates. and she wears them when she goes dancing or screwing dudes in the woods. So that's another thing they keep mentioning. Willard brings this up, and Ren even brings it up later, that she's been around the block a lot.
Yeah.
So she's kind of like the small-town tramp here. But she's got big dreams. She wants to get out of town.
Yeah. She wants to go legit.
She wants to go legit. She's too legit to quit. So this duel between them is basically a chicken race on tractors.
Yeah.
Now, this is the instructions, because Ren's never driven a tractor before. So Woody and Willard are teaching him how, and then we get another kind of, like, comedy routine here. So let's listen to that.
A chicken race with tractors? Well, how hard could it be, right?
It's like a car. It's easy. It's like driving a sports car. Nothing could be simpler.
Hey, old man, just remember, stay calm.
Calm. Calm. I've never driven a tractor before.
It's easy. Look, this is your clutch.
You got your clutch shell here.
Right.
Your gas and your brake.
Start off, just shift it in
the start off, you want to shift it in the high.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Don't worry about
it.
Put it in the third.
Get your emergency brake. These operate your bucket.
Don't mess with the buckets.
So, yeah, they're like double talking over each other in the instructions. Now, Brian, I think this would be a good time because before the race starts, Chuck and Ariel and all his friends are just sitting on a tractor smoking a joint. And there's actually quite a few pot scenes throughout this movie. I didn't even write down the scene where Ren almost gets busted by a teacher because, like, Chuck's friend, the drug dealer, just shoves, like, the longest joint of all time. Did you notice that?
It was like a six-inch joint,
and Ren, like, flushes it down the toilet before the teacher can see him. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, why don't you go into what the IMDb says about that?
Alcohol, drugs, smoking. Teenager Ren, Kevin Bacon, is shown blowing off his frustration by smoking a cigarette and drinking a beer. The four main characters, Ariel, Ren, Willard, and Rusty, go to a bar and drink alcohol. Willard, particularly, drinks many beers and is shown smoking a cigarette. One student at Ren's school offers him a joint as a quote-unquote free sample and offers to sell him more. Ren flushes it down a toilet to avoid a teacher's questions, referring to the cost of the drug as he does so.
So the tractor race starts, or the chicken fight, and we get that song, you know, we need a hero.
Yeah, this was probably the first one in the movie where I was just like, this song at this point, really?
And this is the movie it's actually from originally.
Yeah, but like it's such a weird, holding out for a hero doesn't scream chicken fight to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when
the pacing of the song fits, but maybe not the lyrics.
Yeah, like, especially since it's a chicken fight that Kevin Bacon should by all means lose because he's trying to chicken out.
But his shoelace gets stuck.
There's nothing heroic about this.
Right.
And then they all celebrate because he eventually wins.
Because Chuck bails into like a ravine.
Because Chuck didn't want to die.
Yeah, he didn't want to die.
It seemed like a song that was just put on because they're like, where can we fit? This one will work here. This has got the right beat. And it lyrically didn't serve the moment at all.
The other movie that song reminds me of is Short Circuit 2.
I thought you were going to say Shrek.
Shrek. Oh, they used that in Shrek?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. So then after this chicken fight, Ariel starts getting all interested in Ren. So SJP, a.k.a. Rusty, Sarah Jessica Parker, she's like giving her all the scoop. She don't, this is when they were like, oh, he hasn't been dating anyone. It's like, he's been in town for 2 days.
Yeah.
Like, who is he dating? He's met 3 people so far.
One of them is Chris Penn.
One of them is Chris Penn. And so, yeah, she's got very interested. And this was the joint scene that came up when the guy tries to just give him the longest joint. And the teacher sees it, but since there's no evidence, he's in the clear.
Yeah.
He just flushes it down the toilet. But this scene kind of goes towards, because the Reverend and Ren interact at the beginning, but then you don't see him hear much about Ren. But for some, out of the blue, this teacher goes like, oh, the Reverend was right about you. Like somehow Reverend Shaw Moore starts to form this bad opinion about Ren, and he hasn't really done that much so far.
I mean, it's probably entirely based on his appreciation of Kurt Vonnegut.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Just because he disagreed. I mean, I guess you can't have an opinion in this town because...
But the book has the word slaughterhouse in the title.
It's so...
I know nothing about it, but it's such a disgusting title.
Although, they're probably a town that produces beef.
Probably.
I would say. There's probably many a slaughterhouse in that town.
Yeah.
And the aunt and uncle get to get concerned because they hear about this incident and they think that Ren's having trouble. So they're getting really, the mom doesn't seem that concerned because he's doing just normal things that a kid would do in the city. But it's strange here. Because of this slight argument, Ren gets super mad, and this is when he drives into...
I need to dance my feelings.
He drives into a warehouse. Now, was this tied to the mill? I didn't even know where this was. Yeah. And he just starts... And now, you had mentioned this before, just to go off of that theme. He puts in a cassette that starts playing, like, I think this is another Kenny Loggins song, but a really, like, angry dance song where he starts dancing around the whole place. But... Again, that car and that speakers has some range because he's all over that warehouse, unless it was echoing off of the walls.
But that's not good conditions for dancing because you won't be able to hit the rhythm precisely.
That's true. That's true. But, well, you know, I guess you assume it's more in his head at one point. And he's doing these gymnastic things on these beams that are like perfectly placed uneven bars attached
it's
to the ceiling.
It's basically Gymkhana.
Gymkhana. Yeah, it is totally... And he swings on a rope. Like, did you see when he swung on that rope? And I was like, whoa, he's like a pirate all
he's
of
like
a sudden.
He's like Tarzan.
Yeah. And when he's kind of at the end of him dancing, Ariel sees him and...
He might fly at one point,
does
too.
Does he fly?
He does like a leap that they replay 8 times.
Yeah.
And it's just him kind of
he's
vaguely
8
flying.
Lords of Leaping.
He is.
When Ariel catches him and she's like kind of buddying up to him and she's like, why haven't you ever... Ask me out. So again, he's been there for 3 days. And then at one point, and again, this goes into the kind of the whole theme about how she's kind of a tramp, is she goes, she asks about kissing her. So let's listen to his response.
Someday.
Who is the someday
shit? Well, I get the feeling you've been kissed a lot. You know, I'm afraid I'd suffer by comparison.
So the beginning of the clip got cut off, but she said, hey, aren't you going to ever ask to kiss me? And he was like, someday. And then he basically calls her a slut.
Yep.
Because he's like, you've been kissing around. I don't want to be compared, which I understand his point.
Yeah, you wouldn't necessarily want to be compared, but she can do what she wants.
Yeah, it's true. Hey, she's a modern woman.
Yeah.
But that was one of the other things, because, again, was watching similar movies of the same age characters around the time, this would be the point of the movie where these two characters would kiss.
Yeah.
But they don't. So that was kind of a different twist to it.
They don't because he's too busy slut-shaming her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like I said, she wants to get out. She wants to go to college. Even some colleges she hasn't told her parents she's applied to.
Oh. She's definitely going to Arizona State
University. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. She shows him the yearbook, which is basically this train car that has all kinds of poems and book pages and music lyrics and all the stuff that the town doesn't like.
Yep.
This is kind of their way to revolt a little bit. And they write their own poems, too. So we find out there's kind of another side to Ariel than just, like, getting into trouble and sleeping around and stuff like that. She's got a softer side. And so she does that, and then all of a sudden, but then she kind of turns wild again because she's standing on a train track. And a train comes, and she's kind of playing chicken with the trains. A lot of chicken games in this movie. And she waits to the last minute, and he pushes her out of the way. He saves her. And again, this would be another point where they would probably maybe kiss again, but that doesn't happen again. So they're really teasing the audience the whole time.
Or maybe kill a character.
That's true. That could have...
The negative effects of these sinful ways.
That's true.
Because you have a character die here, and then the town discovers this car full of the poems and the lyrics and like you use that to further the narrative there.
Yeah. That would have been good if they discovered that.
See? Come on, Footloose.
And so she gets home late and Lithgow kind of scolds her for being that late, but she said she wasn't drinking or dancing or doing drugs, and he goes, who are you with? And she says, Ren McCormick. And he's like, that kid's a bad egg. Stay away from her.
It's what the Reverend told me.
Yeah.
You mean yourself? Yes.
I heard it from me. Ren's antics have kind of affected his family and other things. Like, he got kicked off the gymnastics team because basically he's, quote unquote, being a bad influence on the daughter, even though she's the worst influence.
Yeah.
I wrote down this line because I thought it was funny. He was arguing with Willard at one point where he says, oh, this is like a small town. He's like, this isn't a small town. We got TV. We got Family Feud. Which I guess Ray Combs would have been the host at the time.
Yeah, probably around
then. Probably around the time then.
But they probably still had Richard Dawson episodes.
Yeah. And then Willard makes a joke like, you know, where would they even like have a fun time, like at the church? He's making a joke, and but Ren says like, that's a good idea. No, we should throw a dance. And that's kind of how he gets this idea in his head, which is going to be his driving motivation for the rest of the movie, is he wants to actually throw a good time for these podunk members of Beaumont.
So they should have a renegade dance in the basement of the church that gets busted up by the cops.
Oh, like they should make some attempts.
Yeah. Show me a struggle so that we can get to the point. Right. Ah, films.
And then we see this weird montage where the Reverend is just like talking to different groups of people, but saying the exact same speech. Like they show like the different parts of the speech, and he's just talking to the same people. And then when they're done, they're...
Well, that does show the emptiness of his words. Yeah. He's giving kind of a rehearsed speech.
That's true,
that
yeah.
It's a spiel that he does.
And the people have to wait till he's done before they can eat their cake.
Yeah.
Which I'd be like, get it over with. And it also kind of, the more he interacts with the members of the town council, although he's the guy that's kind of the most outspoken or the biggest voice about against dancing and things like that, the town council just seemed to be much more biased and judgmental than him. Like, he'll say one thing, but then, like, I guess he does practice what he preaches, but he kind of understands the other side, where it just seems like the town council members are one-sided. Like, he's a more of, like, a rounded character, even though he's got his strong moral position.
It feels like the town council members are just doing what they think he would want them
right.
to do.
Or they've taken the ball, but they've taken it too far.
Yeah, and like, they're like, no, we can't show any weakness because
right.
we'll get voted out of office or something.
Right.
However it works in this town.
So the four main kids, Ren, Willard, Ariel, and Rusty, go to a square dance place over the state line because Ren was like, I want to show you guys an actual good time. And again, we got another classic song. We got John Cougar Mellencamp's Hurt So Good playing
yep.
on the jukebox. And Willard refuses to dance because he won't tell Rusty. He told Ren that he doesn't know how to dance. So he's just kind of sitting at the table. Rusty really wants to dance, but he just makes her sit, and he just keeps ordering beers. And we were noticing, like, they freely just gave them beers. Like,
yeah.
They're high school students.
Oh, you're in this bar? Oh, you must be old enough
beers.
To drink.
Yeah, so they just sit there.
With your 4'10" friend there named
yeah.
Rusty?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure you're legal to drink.
So Ren and Ariel just go on the dance floor, and they're busting a move. And one point, they're doing a slow dance in that song, I've been waiting for a girl like you, which is like another classic 80s song.
Yep.
So they're slow dancing.
It is a fairly classic soundtrack.
It is. Well, it's one of the more iconic soundtracks, like,
yeah, like
through
it's,
and through.
It's all the greatest hits that you would have heard playing at TJ Maxx when you were a kid.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. Plus all those specific ones that Kenny Loggins wrote just for this movie, including the Footloose theme song, which comes on again. So this that song comes on.
It's our recurring theme.
It's a recurring theme. Rusty can't stand it anymore, so she goes out to dance with this like really skinny cowboy guy. And then he spins her into, or she somehow gets spun into like this burly cowboy guy.
Uh-oh.
And that's when, like, as soon as they start dancing, Willard's like, I can't take it anymore. He's like, that's my girl. She came with me. And it starts like a fight where he gets punched in the face after he was told to flake off. I like those like 80s terms that come out. Jump back.
Like, I like that it clearly sounds like the edited for TBS version.
Yeah, but no.
Hey, man, flake off.
Flake off, yeah. But he also, well, he made that guy mad, too, because a line that me and my wife actually audibly laughed at when he told the guys, like, when's the last time you saw your dick? Which was pretty funny. So, yeah, he got punched and he's bleeding. They got kicked out of the place. And they're driving home and they're going over the bridge that takes you back to Beaumont. And this is when we kind of find more about what happened on this bridge and why the people don't like it and what led to these rules.
I hate this bridge. It gives me the creeps. How come?
You've heard this one. The infamous Crosby Bridge accident, right? You've heard it?
No.
You're missing out. About 5 years ago, these kids were playing highway tag and they were drunk. So one car hits the other one and they both go over the edge of the bridge. Dead. That's when they started passing the laws against booze, against dancing and drinking. I don't know. My father had a field day.
Your father what?
My older brother was one that got killed.
So that's the inciting incident.
Yep.
So that's the big reveal, that one of the kids that got killed was the Reverend's son. So that's why he's so against it.
That's why I wouldn't have the Reverend's daughter be one of the ones to die in the movie.
No.
But like, I feel like we need those stakes to be seen in the movie as well to justify it.
Right. See someone
Otherwise, it's just a foolish policy, and then the kids can just defeat it without actually defeating it.
Well, don't you think that it happened like a while ago? That's why it's not... It seems like a bit of an outdated thing. That's why, in the end, they're kind of able to fight it. You think if it was so fresh that people would give in if someone like just had died like 2 days earlier?
I would be more interested to see that struggle.
Yeah.
Because then you get the, no, it's not worth fighting this. Like, this is the way it should be from some of the kids. Like, you can have more struggle versus, we want to have a prom.
Right.
I think it just would lead to much more interesting conflict.
So another theme that happens in this movie is that Ariel gets beat up a lot. Because she comes home, and her dad criticizes her and slaps her. And Diane Wiest is, you know, although she's supportive, she keeps criticizing Lithgow because she's like, although he's like a great man and gives these great speeches, he's not very good on like a one-to-one level. They're all exactly. Like rehearsed. So Ren is trying to throw this dance, and it's not sure if he's getting a lot of support, but they keep trying to reach out to the students to get that. And as he's leaving the store, the drug dealer guy, whose name is Rich, he jumps him, and the girls and this guy, Woody, come back out, and Woody kind of... This guy, Woody, is able to, like, take on three guys by himself.
Yeah.
He's kind of like a big guy. He's a good friend that he made, so that was good to have that big guy. And then I totally don't remember the cut to a scene where all of a sudden it's a shower scene where you see all these guys' asses, and I did not remember that whatsoever.
Nope.
But I guess that's a good time to jump into the nudity of the review guide here.
Yes, they do say, lengthy scene of locker room showering with male nudity shown from behind in the background of a discussion between Willard and Ren.
Right.
There are also a couple of shots containing pubic hair in the guy's shower.
I'm glad I didn't see that, yeah.
Also, various sexual comments made throughout the movie. Comments about how someone became pregnant. In another scene, a girl is referred to as a bee in heat and can't wait to wrap legs. Comments are made about dancing turning young people on. Another comment says, we used to get turned on just looking at each other.
Yes, that's what Diane Weiss says.
One conversation in cafeteria alludes to how older girls in a certain town are eager for something and specific talk about an incident with one Ginger Pop, even though it is not true.
Oh, yeah. When he tells the story that he made Ginger Pop.
But it's specifically in the guide, it says, one Ginger Pop.
Ginger Pop. You know that old Ginger Pop.
There's also some kissing. At one point, a girl and a guy are seen with her putting boots back on after presumably having sex.
Yes.
He has shirt off, proceeds to sit on top of him. She is fully clothed.
Yes.
I guess you could say they were knocking boots.
That's true. Red boots. So basically, but the whole point of that shower scene, they only threw that in to show butts and to basically say the line, to sum up those conversations, they say, you can't fight City Hall. Because Ren wants to go to the town council, and Willard's like, you can't fight City Hall. So that was the whole purpose of that scene. So it didn't seem very necessary.
And in the DVD commentary, according to IMDb, apparently Kevin Bacon revealed that the co-ed extras in the locker room scene were paid $20 a piece to appear nude.
Oh, 20 bucks.
20 bucks.
Wow. We then get into another one of the most memorable sequences of this movie is Ren teaching Willard how to dance. And this is when we get that, let's hear it for the boy.
Another song choice that just seems awkward.
it's a fun upbeat song.
It's a fun upbeat song,
for,
but again,
for dance
the lyrics,
teaching.
The lyrics don't seem to fit.
Well, he's trying to teach him.
A boy dances.
He's trying to teach him to be a Romeo, you know?
No.
But via dance. Another great montage here. So now they dance down a hallway. They run through a field with a boombox. They dance on the football field and the basketball court. They sit on the bleachers and make their feet dance.
Let's face it, the real romance in this movie is Ren and Willard.
It's true. They dance with the cousins, too. And then the last scene, I was so confused by this location, where Willard's dancing, and it looks like a parking lot, but it's all like circle lines and like squiggles, and I'm like, what? Where the hell is this?
Probably a crop circle.
No, but it's on a pavement somewhere.
It's
like a parking lot.
Crop circle.
It's very strange. And then by the end, I guess he's finally starting to get it because he's doing all kinds of moves. The council wants to burn another book. Again, they're getting really, really feisty. And this is when the Reverend actually starts to stand up to Roger a little bit, because I think he's going way too far. Chuck ends up confronting Ariel because he's been trying to get a hold of her, but he realizes she's getting a little too close to Ren, and she hits him, but he like straight punches her in the face, and then they like wrestle, and then she tries to hit his truck with like a pipe, and then he gets on her on the ground and just starts punching her. So again, so first time I saw this movie, did not remember this scene. Second time seeing it, I was like, where the hell did this scene come from? Yeah. Like straight like female abuse, because I probably didn't see that. Maybe I saw it in pieces the first time, but yeah. I was just like, whoa, this is an aggressive scene. She reaches out to Ren, and this kind of brings them closer, because she was the lifeline that she wanted to call to comfort her. And this is finally when they talk about like this music box that she has. And then they finally have their kiss scene. So this is the big moment between them.
It's been building for so long.
It's been building. It only required some punches to the face to make it come true.
And 3 days living in town.
Exactly. Oh, he's only been around for 2 days. He hasn't dated 3 days. That's the three is the magic number.
Yeah.
The Reverend and the wife are talking. She's kind of bringing him around and realizing that the angst about dancing is really kind of misplaced. It's really about over the son's death. So it's not about like what led to it. It's just because he misses his son. But he's still like saying that dancing leads to sexual irresponsibility. This is still his standing ground, because he's in charge of the entire spiritual health of the whole community.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, I mean, again, it's a small town, but obviously, clearly there's only one religion, I guess, all these people
are members
of. Not a lot of Jews in Beaumont. So the night before the town council meeting, Ren's all nervous. Originally, he thought there was just going to be the 7 council members going to be there, but he's going to have to speak in front of the whole entire town.
Exactly, because everyone is very involved in local government here as well.
And Ariel helps out by giving him a copy of her Bible with specific passages marked, which that's a good move.
Yeah.
Especially if you're talking to a reverend. That night, while they're sleeping at Ren's house, one of the guys who I thought this was maybe Chuck, I wasn't sure positive, maybe one of Chuck's friends, they throw a brick through the window that says burn in hell.
I assumed it was Chuck. I assumed it was Chuck. It was a truck that was driving.
Yeah, it was a truck, so. and it looked like Chuck's truck.
The truck truck.
The truck truck.
The truck a truck.
Not the chuck wagon.
Oh.
And he threw it right through the window of the two young cousins, the two young girls. It's like, that's not cool, man.
Yeah.
And we begin to learn, again, more of the after effects. So the aunt and uncle are very upset, and they keep getting dirty looks through town. The mom lost her job. She told her boss to shove it when she said, you know, hey, get control of your kid.
You can shove it.
Shove it where the sun don't shine, because it's like the TBS language.
Flake off.
And the mom, go flake yourself with milk. I added that last part. And the mom talks to Ren, and she's like, well, why does this dance like mean so much to you? And we kind of learn a little bit about Ren and his reasonings behind really going the extra mile to make this dance happen.
Let me ask you something. Why this dance in this town?
It's not just about dance. I
know. That's what I mean.
Dad first threatened to leave. I thought it was because of me. I thought it was something that I wasn't doing right. And I figured there was something that I could do to make it like it was, and that he'd want to stay, you know? But when he left just like that, then I realized that everything that I'd done hoping that he'd stay, everything I'd done, it didn't mean shit, you know? It didn't matter. And I felt like, what difference does it make? Now, I'm thinking I could really do something, you know? I could really do something for me this time, you know? I don't know, otherwise I'm just gonna disappear.
So this is the emotional heart of this movie here.
Yeah.
Why he's doing it. It's kind of tied to how he couldn't do anything to keep his dad around.
So now he's got to dance his feelings.
He's going to dance his feelings. That's why angry gymnastic dances.
He needs a hero.
He needs a hero.
He's holding out for a hero.
So the town council meeting the next night, and the first first matter of business is that dog licenses have increased from $350 to $450.
Those bastards.
How dare you. And they're all waiting for the new business to come about, and Ariel is wearing a Dance Your Ass Off t-shirt.
It's offensive.
So Ren makes a motion, and he wants to abolish the no dancing law. And Lithgow kind of like immediately says he does endorse it, and they try to like just send it down because it's going to lead to spiritual corruption. The woman that is the, I think she was the wife of Roger, that guy in the council. She's like, this is just outrageous. And Diane Weiss says, sit down. So she tells her to sit down. It's like she's standing up. So when Weiss talks, you listen.
Indeed.
She needs business. She was in the movie Cops and Robbersons. You better listen.
She was. Now, I really wish, like, as he's going off about spiritual corruption, like, just someone would go, well, your daughter's a slut.
That's true. They should have. Yeah, that would have been, been good.
Slut shaming, but I'm just like, he's so focused on the big picture, and he's not seeing what's right in front of him.
Yeah, right. What's in his own backyard. She says, give Ren a chance to talk, and Ren starts to talk, and he uses those quotes to kind of get his point apart. So this is kind of like one of the other more memorable scenes of the movie is when he's making his case.
From the oldest of times, people danced for a number of reasons. They danced in prayer, or so that their crops would be plentiful, or so their hunt would be good. And they danced to stay physically fit and show their community spirit. And they danced to celebrate, and that is the dancing that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Aren't we told in Psalm 149, praise ye the Lord, sing unto the Lord a new song, let them praise his name in the dance.
Amen.
It was King David, who we read about in Samuel, and what did David do? David danced before the Lord with all his might, leaping and dancing before the Lord, leaping and dancing.
So there you go. He makes his case, and everyone's on board with him, and they're all congratulating. But the next day, it didn't change anything, because as the guy Andy, who runs the mill, says, he goes, oh, you got railroaded.
Yep.
It's like, sorry. You know, it was just an uphill battle. But even though Ren thinks things are over, it's not over, because Andy's like, well, why don't you have the dancing basin? And they're like, well, Basin, that's very far away. But no, it's right there where the mill is. Because the mill is right over the tracks.
Yeah.
So they're right over the town line. So they're in Basin, which is right next door. And all he has to do is kind of just convince the Reverend to, like, just do it one town over, basically. So the Reverend's practicing his sermon. And Ariel's watching. And they kind of start to get into a fight. And she's saying, like, she's trying to give her confession and standing up for her dad and saying how that she's not a virgin.
Yeah, like there's going to be a lot of good things in this confession.
30 times over. She's not a virgin. And she's trying to, like, make him see the light. And at this point, this woman comes running in and saying that Roger, that, like, really strict guy, and all these other people start burning all these books. So the Reverend starts coming to run out, and he's trying to, he's basically saying, you know, he gives us this big speech and says, like, who are you to judge? It's like, which is kind of hypocritical, because they're like, who are you to judge? And no one says, like, well, same to you, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, you know. But he finally realizes the errors of his ways, because if you start to censor some things, you just start to censor everything until there's nothing left. He's basically saying, these are just books. There's no, Satan's not in these books. It's in the people. They're just taking it too far. And
Satan's,
I think,
in the people.
He kind of looks at himself and is like, what's going on here? What have I done with my life? Ren is at the Reverend's house, and they have some kind of conversation where he thanks him for talking to him. And Ariel says, what were you talking to Ren about? And he was like, well, he was asking if he could take you to a prom. We're like, well, what's going on? There is no prom. There's no dancing. But the next Sunday at church, the Reverend is giving a speech, and he's telling his big decision after all this time of reflection.
If we don't start trusting our children, how will they ever become trustworthy? I'm told that the senior class at the high school has got use of a warehouse in Basin for the purpose of putting on a senior dance. please join me to pray to the Lord to guide them in their endeavors.
So he basically finally gives the okay for them to have a dance in Basin, not in Beaumont.
Well, yeah, I mean, he can't really overrule the town committee.
Yeah,
to say okay, have the dance.
That's
here.
A good point too.
But it is one of those things. I'm like, if your big concern is okay, well, you know, dancing leads to drinking, and drinking leads to sex. Like,
and that leads to death.
It leads to death. Like, I would rather have them close to home.
Yeah. If there's they're not that far. They're just over the tracks.
Just over the tracks. But yeah. But seriously, like, hey, let's keep it in a controlled environment and let them dance and do that as a test. Like, we're going to have the dance here at the church.
Let's have a lock-in.
Yeah. And, like, we'll be able to monitor them and see that they're just having fun.
Yeah.
And then we can see what we do moving forward.
So at this point, they get into the montage of them setting up the dance at the mill. And this was at the point in the movie where my wife, who had watched this, she had never seen, she saw the remake. She never saw the original. But at this point, she had gone, you know, they've accomplished nothing because they didn't overturn anything in Beaumont.
Nope.
Like the whole point of the movie. And I was like, well, it's baby steps. You know, they changed the mind of at least the reverend. But You're not gonna build Rome in one day, you know. Basically, so.
But you could get a girlfriend in 8 hours.
You can. That's true. Just a few days in town. So they're setting up the dance. They're like clearing and dancing at the same time and setting up. They're cleaning up and everything. Diane Weiss gets her daughter Ariel a corsage, and Ren shows up in his cool red jacket and his bow tie and says that she's beautiful. And
you're beautiful.
And then they cut to the dance, and now everyone's at the dance. And again, this is another conversation where my wife was like, well, why aren't they dancing? And I said, well, they're awkward. They're not familiar how to dance.
It's just like
they were just dancing. Well, while they were setting up the mill.
Yeah, but you can do dancing on your own. But then as soon as you're sitting there faced with, you know, the pretty girls from the other camp and the fat camp, like everyone starts getting awkward about
it. That's true. Because everyone was like, they were like readjusting their clothes. One guy was picking his nose.
Yep, there was a nose pick.
Which was kind of gross. And then Ren and Ariel start dancing. They start leading the charge, almost like Tim from Heavyweights.
Exactly.
As soon as he started dancing, everyone else got in.
They just needed someone to lead the charge.
Start off.
And then they all learn how to dance really quickly.
Well, that's something I'm going to get into as well. But meanwhile, while the dance has started, the Reverend and his wife, V, by the way, is her name, which I didn't realize to the end, V Moore. They show up at the end, and they're right out the outskirts, and that guy Andy is like, well, you guys, I weren't expecting to be here. You would be the last people. And they were just kind of, like, Diane Weiss wanted to go right into the dance, which is so not cool. Like,
no,
you don't want to do
it.
But he was like, he just wanted to kind of monitor. And then he almost, like, breaks down, has his moment, and finally, like, realizes his angst over his son being gone. And they,
I miss my boy!
And she says, like, oh, we're almost dancing. So that's as close as probably John Lithgow will ever dance, but that was close. Willard and Rusty show up on his motorcycle. They're a little late. And Chuck pulls up, too, and Rusty was like, Willard, you promised not to fight. I always feel it's like an unfair request, because if someone else attacks you, it's like, don't defend yourself. Like, I understand, like, don't start something.
Yeah.
But if someone attacks you, it's like, don't fight back. That's basically what she's saying. So they start, like, beating on him. Like, five guys start beating on Willard. And Rusty finally goes, kill him! Because he's like, what do you want me to do? And she's like, kill him! So he starts fighting back. And then Ren comes jumping off of the banister. Now, Ren, again, is a gymnast. So he is great at jump kicks.
He does gymkata them.
Yeah, he just gymkatas them. He just does a lot of kicks to the face. And he finally beats up Chuck and gets him to the ground. And then basically after this, which they play in a lot of like AFI montages of like scenes from movies, you get this last line of the movie, which is Ren running down the stairs and saying,
hey, what's this I see? I thought this was a party! Let's dance!
Which they start off a lot of montages because it's kind of like, let's get this party started! And
let's
then,
dance!
And then you
and
see
now
all
let's
the
have
clips.
A dance montage.
Yeah. So then the rest of the movie is this them dancing to Footloose. Yeah, throughout the dance scene, there's quite a number of things. So Willard shows up, and he starts dancing. Well, first he starts, like, just chest-bumping people.
Yeah.
He's, like, chest-bumping, and then he's doing these, like, awkward, like, dancing. And at this point, all this my wife's comment was, what was the glitter budget on this movie? Because all this glitter starts coming. Glitter it keeps coming down and coming down.
And then they keep putting, like, a string of lights directly in front of the camera.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it's, like, very obnoxiously in the foreground, yeah. Thinking, oh, this will look cool. It's like depth of field,
and then you
but
get
without actual depth of field.
And then you get this town that, again, they don't dance much because of this band that happened. Like, and you have these hesitant, like, they were pushing these guys on the dance floor, like, hey, you should dance. And like, no, 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 not me. And then the guy goes out, he's like a professional pop and lock.
Yeah, now they're pop and
lock. And break dancing and everything like that.
It's crazy.
It's funny. And they are getting into how, like, Willard's becoming a good dancer. And one of the trivia bits that I read was that they actually added the montage of Willard learning how to dance because they wanted Chris Penn for this movie, but he couldn't dance. So they wrote those dancing scenes in later of him learning how to dance, which I thought added to the movie, yeah. Which is good because, again, they're from a town where there's not a lot of dancing that's happened. I mean, they should be learning.
Everyone should be learning.
Right.
Like, how do any of them know?
Except for Ren. He's the trailblazer. So that's the end of the movie. Then they go into Footloose.
It just ends.
It just ends, yeah. After, well, Ren comes out, like, they kind of push him because he's the one that organized the whole thing. So it's kind of like giving him his day, and he starts dancing a little bit. And then the movie's over, and we get some more Kenny Loggins music going on. End of movie.
End of movie.
So, Brian, what'd you think, having never seen this movie again?
Not horribly impressed.
No? Do you see why people... A lot of people cherish this movie. It's obviously, like I said, it's one of the most iconic 80s dancing movies, but...
Like, I can see why it... But, like, I don't know. I don't think it really holds up to the hype to me. I think it would be one you had to have seen growing up to have fond memories of it.
Yeah, I think it's really one where if you... It's like, don't compare it to things you've seen since.
Yeah.
Because that could play against it, but if at the time when this came out, when it was like, this is the 80s dance movie, you know?
And there's a nugget for a good story in there. I just feel like they didn't commit to it enough,
mm-hmm.
That it just becomes kind of fluff surrounding that nugget.
A fluff nugget.
But, I mean, yeah, there's some good dancing, I guess, in the end. But, like, and that's the thing, like, it's not even, like, a movie full of dancing. You get his angry dancing, you get the...
Fight against the town.
Learning to dance
montage,
and then you get the dance at the end, but it's, like, dance is a concept versus, like, a vital aspect of the movie.
It really kind of brings me back, though. It harks on probably, which, you know, super 80s that you don't see as much today, where basically an entire movie can be a soundtrack.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is, which happened all the time in the 80s, even going back to the 70s a little bit, but you don't see that as much any day. That's why.
Today soundtracks are used more in service of the film versus as a supplemental income aspect.
Right.
Like, when you have movies that are more on the musical spectrum, that's where you might sell some CDs or.
Yeah.
Albums on iTunes, but people are a lot less tuned into that aspect nowadays, it seems.
Right. I just have to say that, like I said, I did see this when I was young. Again, harking back to the days of the 80s, is you don't have movies like this anymore. It's just, I had fun watching this again. I think it's just fun. It's not like a big thinker. You don't have a lot of movies where you can just kind of turn your brain off and be like, I'm having a good time. Like, every time the music came on, I felt my feet doing those dance moves and stuff like that. So it's just something that it's fun. And sometimes you just need a fun movie like that.
Yeah.
So I enjoy that.
And the soundtrack is fairly iconic.
Yeah.
It's essentially now that's what I call music 1984.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the remake?
No.
Yeah, not as good. Not as good as this one.
I would have hoped that they could have used that to fix some of the story issues.
It's not much different. I'd have to watch. I only saw it once. Boston dancer Kenny Wormold is the guy who plays Ren. And he's a good... They hired him because he's a dancer.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the star appeal of Kevin Bacon. Because Kevin Bacon was great in this role. He was supposed to... I was reading, at the time, he was supposed to be the star of Stephen King's Christine about the haunted car.
Oh, yeah.
And that he was offered that role, but he had the opportunity to be the star to audition for this role. So he decided to turn down the role of a sure thing in the hopes of a role that he wasn't even guaranteed to get. But they told him if he got this role, this movie was going to make him a superstar.
Yeah.
And apparently him being in the movie for about the audition for about like 8 seconds, they were like, you're the guy. So, I mean, and who remembers Christine, really? You remember the car, but who was in Christine?
Exactly. No, like, and with this movie, like it has that teen appeal.
Yes.
And he also kind of comes across as a safe bad boy.
Yeah. I mean, imagine how many girl sleepovers this movie was watched at.
I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, and then when those girls grow up, it's like, here's that classic movie, you know, for remembrance. Let's pop on Footloose because I love this movie. And, you know, so it's got that lasting appeal.
And then they pop on Wild Things.
Woo!
Where I'm guessing, I'm guessing he was paid more than
$20. More than $20 to show that dong.
And on that note, Cinemaniacs.
Do we want to talk about products at all quick or just end on the dog?
I think we just end on the dog.
We'll end on the dog. Well, thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. I'm Mark, and for Brian and MIA Rick, just remember, you can always paint the grass green. Good night.
Goodbye.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Want to listen to some Men at Work?
Where do they work?
No, the band Men at Work.
The band?
No, not the band. Like, you know, like the police.
I'm under arrest?
No, not like, who do you think I'm talking about?
Hootie and the Blowfish?
No, not Hootie and the Blowfish. They're three doors down.
From where?
No, the band.
Isn't that The Last Waltz?
No, that's the name of an album from the band.
What's an album?
An album. Like
I'm a millennial. I don't know what albums are.
Okay, go put a cassette in your car. Footloose!
Thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this episode of the $5 Bin Podcast and our full movie reviews of Footloose. You can find us on the social interwebs. Tweet us at the number $5 Bin, P-O-D, like us on Facebook, or email us at thefivedollarbin.podcast@gmail.com. You can download episodes on iTunes, and when you do, hey, why not leave a nice rating and review? It helps others to find the podcast as well. Why, thank ya! For information about Brian and my improv organization and upcoming workshops and performances, like our March 10th fundraiser performance, you can visit NaticImprov.com or like Natick Improv on Facebook. Well, that's it for this episode, Cinemaniacs. Until next time, hasta la vista, baby dancing Willard.